Now, there's a couple of things you got to do after you accept responsibility in order to claim your power. And the first thing is, you got to look at your belief. You see, the turning point for me, and this is why it's so important to be in a seminar. This is why it's so important to be here today. Because in October 1997 in Jacksonville, Florida, I was at a three-day seminar. Had I not been at that seminar, I shudder to think what my life would be like today. Because I heard 13 magic words that transformed my life. I had already put most of the other pieces of the puzzle together. I'd been working on the puzzle for a while. I'd been reading voraciously. I'd been going to seminars, listening to audios. I was taking all types of actions that were new to me. I'd created a whole set of new habits, so many habits that people in my family thought I was sick, that I was ill, that something was wrong with me. Because they weren't used to me being that way. From the stage that night on Saturday night, the speaker said, "The size of your success is determined by the size of your belief." And it rocked my world. Because I was ready for that. That was my last piece. It may not be your last piece. It may just be a piece of your puzzle. I knew that's what I'd been looking for. Now, that's not the first time I'd seen those words. Anybody know where those words appear? The Magic of Thinking Big. I had read that book a dozen times or more before I heard her that night. I had read those very words. But they never came off the page the way they came out of her mouth that night. You know, I was so desperate to do anything and everything. My motto was, whatever it takes, I don't care. I had two choices. I could roll over and die, and I could give up on the situation that I had, or I could take responsibility, claim responsibility, and claw my way out of it, and I was coming out of it. The problem we have with poverty in America, the problem we have with poverty in the world is its thinking, its lack mentality, and it goes from generation to generation to generation. Somebody in my family had to stop it. It had to stop in my family. And nobody else in my family volunteered. So I said, I'm the one. So I was desperate, fanatical. And I went to work on my belief for the next 90 days. It's the only thing I did. I focused on changing my belief in myself, in my business, and in everything else I was doing. I worked on my belief. Within 90 days, things began to change. All of a sudden, I'm attracting success. I'm attracting good things. It's like the first day of spring when the flowers begin to open up, especially those azaleas, that first day. And that's what my life started to look like. Within 6 months, won a national sales contest, and within 1 year, you could not even tell it was the same life. 1 year later, you would not even have known it was the same person. You know, it took me many years to get to where I was in 1996. 25 years to get there. It didn't take me but a year to get out of it. Once I had all the pieces, I was pretty obstinate. I was pretty stubborn. I didn't want to admit a lot of things. When I finally got humble, and sometimes that's how you got to get, face down on the floor, humble. Now, was I totally out of the woods in 1 year? No. But boy, I was so far from where I'd been. So in some way, your belief is keeping you where you're at. See, one of my favorite stories about the power of belief is the story about the first person to run the 4-minute mile. Who was the person who broke the 4-minute mile? Roger Bannister. Now, you know that story. A lot of people know about that. What they don't know is the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say. From the days of the Greeks running the very first Olympics, they had debated whether humankind could run a sub-4-minute mile. The medical community, the scientific community, said it was not possible. They said if a person ran a mile that fast, their heart would explode. So if you're an athlete out there in training, and the medical community says, if you break that barrier, your heart's going to explode. Do you think that might have affected your training? But for 6,000 years, it was true. They said it couldn't be done. They said, first of all, the body's not capable of it. And if the body were capable of it, they could not withstand it. Until a medical student came along in the 1950s named Roger Bannister in England. He was studying anatomy, part of his medical studies. And evidence is so important when you're trying to change your belief, searching for the evidence. And he became convinced in his study of the anatomy, because he was a runner at the time. He looked at the evidence, and the evidence said to him that a human being, not only would the heart not explode, but the body was more than capable of achieving that mark. He convinced himself from the evidence. He changed his belief from that of the held belief. And then he actually went out and told the world. He made the statement, I'm going to break the 4-minute barrier. And everybody knows that in 1956, he went out and ran a mile in 3:59.4, broke the record. Fantastic. In fact, they recently celebrated the 50th anniversary of that achievement. Now, here's what a lot of people don't know. Within 2 weeks, another person broke the 4-minute mile. In the same year that he did, 9 other people ran a sub-4-minute mile. In 6,000 years of recorded history, no one had been able to run a 4-minute mile, and in 1 year, 9 people did. What changed? Just the belief. That was the only thing that changed. Now stop and think how that applies to your life. You see, belief and faith create unstoppable persistence. Roger Bannister was not going to be stopped. He knew. It was without a doubt. He had the evidence that he could run a 4-minute mile. He got out, he created a training program to train his body to do that. When Maxie Fowler was 36 years old, he took the California bar exam for the first time and he failed. He took it again and he failed. And again, and again, and again, and he failed. He took it in Los Angeles, he took it in San Francisco, he took it in San Bernardino, he took it in San Diego. He took it everywhere they offered the California bar exam. And he failed. He took it when his kids were little and young and still at home. And when his own sons grew up, went to law school, and took the California bar exam, Maxie took it with him. He failed. When one of his sons became a lawyer, Maxie went to work in his office as a law clerk. Took the California bar exam. Failed. At an age when most people are thinking about retirement, Maxie Fowler was still taking the California bar exam. After 25 years, more than 144 days of his life spent in testing rooms, more than $50,000 spent in testing fees, Maxie Fowler took the California bar exam for the 48th time. He passed. Today, Maxie Fowler is a practicing attorney in California in his late 70s, recently honored by the California Bar Association. How many people take the California Bar exam one time and never take it again? How many people take it 3 times and fold up their cards and never take it again? Maxie Fowler had a very strong belief that one day he'd get it right. He never looked at the results that he was getting as the end of the road. He simply looked at them as another lesson to learn. He had to do that with an incredible belief, which almost really could be described as faith. Because belief is strong, but what's stronger than belief? Faith. Napoleon Hill says it is the most powerful thing on earth. Faith. One tremendous person said many years ago it was so powerful that it could move what? As small as what? A mustard seed. And what is faith? The epistle writer said faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Maxie Fowler hoped for the California bar. Do you think after the 10th time he came home, Mama said, Maxie, do you think you want to do something else? How about an accountant? How about CPA? Maybe that's an easier exam. He had an incredible faith. He had an incredible belief. Napoleon Hill again in Think and Grow Rich says, desire and faith are the beginning of all achievement. Desire and faith, which faith and belief are cousins. Belief is when the evidence is present. Faith is when the evidence is absent. The beginning of all riches, faith and belief are powerful. Your results today are being governed by the beliefs that you hold. Change those beliefs and you will change your results. Here's what a belief is. A belief is simply what you accept as true or real. Does it have to be true? Does it have to be real? It just has to be accepted by you as true or real. Now, for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, people believed the earth was what? Was that true? Was it real? Did people make everyday decisions in their life based on that belief? People in business made those decisions, family decisions, all made based on a belief that was neither true nor real. When you understand what a belief is, and the fact is right now your life is being governed by things that are neither true nor real. I've heard belief, in fact, described like a thermostat in a room. You can move it up, you can move it down, you can change it. It's just simply what you accept as true or real. Throughout history, I mean, some of the worst people in history, Hitler, for instance, who manipulated beliefs, convinced people things were true or real that were not true or real. And you can think of all types of others. But in your own personal world, some of us are living in a flat earth world in our own personal world, aren't we? We're being limited by the beliefs that we hold. The beliefs that we hold about ourselves, the beliefs that we hold about others, the beliefs we have about our abilities, the beliefs that we have about our future or whatever. You have to claim the power of belief if you're going to claim power over your life. You accepted the responsibility this morning. Now you got to set about changing your belief. Very, very powerful. Very, very necessary. Belief is so powerful, it can heal the body. Duke University, a significant medical college, just one of many institutions of higher learning that have done research on the power of faith, the power of belief in healing the body. It's scientific evidence. Belief is so strong it can heal the physical body. How many know the story from the Christian Bible of the blind man? The blind man was seeking to be healed. And Jesus asked him, "Do you believe that I can heal you? Do you believe I can heal you?" Belief is accepted as true or real. He was being asked, "Do you believe it's true that I can heal you?" And what did the blind man say? Yes. And then what did Jesus say? Your faith has healed you. He didn't say, "I healed you." He said, "Your faith has healed you." The person's belief healed them. That's how powerful belief is. That's not some children's story. That's a demonstration of the power of belief, and you have that same power. In fact, you've been using that power to limit your life. Anybody know what a placebo is? Anytime they create a new drug in order to get approval by the FDA, they have to do a lot of clinical studies. And those clinical studies usually involve matching the medicine against a placebo, which is what? It has no qualities other than just sugar. And in many, many cases, some cases almost as high as the medicine itself, but in many, many cases, the placebos have a significant healing effect. People took the placebo believing, accepting as true or real, that they were taking the medicine and were healed by a sugar pill. They were healed by what? Belief. That's the power of belief. It's what I had to do in 1997 to change my belief. Okay, my beliefs today, folks, still limit me. I work on that every day because every day I can cut off a new layer of limiting beliefs, my life just expands, expands, expands. James Allen says, "As a man thinketh." He says, belief is the basis of all action. Here's what I say. You'll never give 100% to something you don't believe in. You'll never give 100% to something you don't think you'll be successful in. If you don't believe in advance that you're going to be successful at it, you will not attempt it with 100% of your effort because you will not subject yourself to rejection. You will not subject yourself to failure. You will not put your esteem at risk. You won't give everything you've got. If you're in a network marketing company, for instance, and you don't have the belief, you're not going to do what it takes. Change your belief and you'll change your results. It is the basis of all action. Napoleon Hill says there's millions of people who believe themselves doomed to poverty and failure because of some strange force over which they believe they have no control. They are the creators of their own misfortunes because of this negative belief, which is picked up by the subconscious and translated into its physical equivalent. I believe myself doomed in the mid-90s, and it grew and it grew and it grew, and I manifested that from my subconscious to its physical equivalent. Just before my problems began to manifest themselves physically, I was living in a beautiful, gorgeous, three-bedroom condo at Volano Beach, Florida. My son learned to fish on that beach. My son's learned to surf on that beach. That was the kind of life I was living. But because a couple of things had gone the wrong way, and I began to feed this thing, and I began to feed it the wrong thoughts, and I was back in that present results model I used earlier, those present results started to feed my thinking instead of ideas feeding my thinking. I convinced myself that I was doomed to poverty and failure. And it didn't take long before the sign showed up. And then when I saw that sign, what did that do? That confirmed my belief. And then the next sign, that just brought more of it. And what did it do? Confirm my belief. And it just confirmed it and confirmed it and confirmed it. It wasn't true or it wasn't real. None of those things were true or real. My life was not in that dire circumstances in the beginning. Had no reason to be, no need to be. I believed it was. Now, I need a volunteer. Ron, you're close. Stand up, please. Ron, you look like an athletic guy. You've been involved in sports before?
Yes, I have.
Okay, so you look like you're in pretty good shape. What kind of sports were you involved in?
Played football in high school, ran track.
Oh, ran track. So you got pretty good feet.
Mm-hmm.
Nimble feet.
Fairly.
Okay, you know what a 2x4 is?
Yes.
Okay, just for the audience, for those people who don't, there's a 2x4. You've seen them before at your lumber store. Here's what's important to know. It is not really 2x4, is it?
No. Nope.
It's 1 7/8 by 3 5/8 or something like that. But even my feet will fit on a 2x4. Okay, so there's no wide feet in here. Ron's got those narrow runner's feet. So if I took a 2x4, Ron, and I laid it down, say it's about 12 foot, and I laid it down between me and you, would you be able to step on that 2x4 and walk toward me without falling off of it?
Absolutely.
Could you go backwards?
Probably.
Could you go sideways?
Yes.
Okay, without falling off?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Not a doubt.
Not a doubt.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a hard thing to do. Now, Ron, we go to New York City. I'm at the Lexington Hotel, and I looked out my window, and there's a building right next door. And it's so close to that building that I could open our window, almost reach out and open the window of that other building.
Okay.
10 or 12 feet across there. And I nailed that 2x4 to the ledge. And I went to that other building and I nailed the 2x4 to the ledge. We're 6 stories up. Could you walk across that 2x4?
Maybe. If the goal was big enough.
If the goal was big enough. Okay, so we went to the top of the rock, Rockefeller Center, and we looked out over New York. It's 62 stories up. If I went and nailed it 62 stories to another building, could you walk across that 2x4?
It would take a really big goal.
Could you walk across it, though?
Yes.
Okay. Would you?
Probably not.
Right. He's truthful, isn't he? And he's honest, isn't he? I wouldn't either. But what changed? What is risk? Risk is a belief about the future, isn't it? That's all that changed. It's still a 2x4. The same 2x4 that you could walk across on the floor. Easily, everybody in the room could do it. It's not a challenge. It's not a problem. The very same 2x4, take it 62 stories up, and all of a sudden our belief changed. The 2x4 didn't change, did it?
That's correct.
Nothing changed. There are things in your life, folks, right now that are just as easy as you walking on the floor, the 2x4, and you think it's stretched across a 62-story building. It's on the floor. It's that easy to do. Give Ron a hand. Thanks, Ron.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. It's not that difficult to do. It's laying on the floor. You've just got to find the evidence. You've got to find the evidence like Roger Bannister did and convince yourself to take the step, to walk out there. It's not 62 stories up. It's not even 7 stories up. It's on the ground. You've got to remove the limits in your life. You've got limiting beliefs, limiting thoughts, limiting words, limiting people. Some of them are your present limiting beliefs. There are things that you've carried around about yourself. For years, one of my limiting beliefs was, I was limited by the fact that I never got my college degree. You know, I forgot the fact that my grandfather had a 6th grade education and died a multimillionaire. I forgot the fact that so many other people who didn't have college degrees had become successful, but I convinced myself that that was limiting me, that that was a reason for some of my failures, some of my lack of success or whatever. What are some other limiting beliefs? Not smart enough. Age.
Sex.
Lack of it or too much of it? Be careful now, Ron. You passed the 2x4 test, but you might flunk that one now. Sex, though, gender is. Aren't there some ladies that believe that their gender limits their ability to do things? Age is one I hear all the time. I'll be 53 years old in August. And I can tell you there are people that are my age that look like they're ready for the nursing home. I'm 53 years old. I'm barely halfway there, folks. I'm going to be 100 years old. Two of my favorite heroes, George Burns and Bob Hope. If you go back and look at the last 10 years of their life, both of them confessed regularly. George Burns had a joke about it. George Burns said he's going to make it to 100 years old, he's going to fire up a cigar, and he's going to have 2 or 3 women around at the same time. I mean, he talked about it all the time. Bob Hope, same way. Bob Hope talked about living to be 100. That was his goal. He was going to do it. Spent the last 10 years of his life talking about it. Those two gentlemen. Now, here's what is interesting. Both of them celebrated their 100th birthday. And within 90 days, both of them passed on. You think it's coincidence? I'm only halfway there. How is age a problem for me in anything? I couldn't play college football again. They wouldn't let me do that. That's probably something I couldn't do. I could coach it. I'm too old to play it. But age is not really a limit to me for anything. I asked Brian Tracy about that, and here's what Brian said. It makes a lot of sense. The new retirement age is 75. Because we're healthier. We're in better shape than the generation before us. We've had the advantage of improvements in medicine and nutrition and whatever. He says the retirement age is 75. The retirement age, by the way, was just selected arbitrarily in the late 1800s, Brian described, by a king in Germany. And they decided to come up with a pension program, and they were looking for an age where most people didn't make it. They didn't want to have to pay it out. Seriously. And 65 was an age they arrived at. Most people didn't make it to 65, so they thought that's a pretty safe age to make retirement. They didn't intend for people to get it. So in the 1920s, 30s, whenever we adopted a Social Security program, what age did they go and adopt as the retirement age? the one that was set in the 1880s, 1890s, and he says the real retirement age. He said 50 is the old 30. I feel better today than I did when I was 30. There's not many things I can't do today that I didn't do when I was 30, and some of those things I shouldn't have been doing anyway, right, Ron? What are some other limiting beliefs besides age? Race? Fear? What is fear? It is the opposite of faith, that's correct, but what is it? False evidence appearing real. It's a false belief in the future. Fear is nothing more than a false belief in the future. It's a belief. Fear is a belief. You hold it. Going up 62 stories to walk out over that 2x4 creates fear, which is what? A belief, a false belief in the future. Because what does that fear say? The fear says, I'm not going to make it, doesn't it? It's a false belief, but we know we walked across it on the floor. And a belief is something we accept as true or real. It doesn't have to be true or real. The second thing is limiting words. Those are other things that we have to absolutely overcome, the limiting words in our life, if we're going to claim our power. Those limiting words are words you use to yourself, and they're words that other people use toward you or have used toward you. What I found amazing as I began to think about it is, how many of you have children? Now, I want you to stop and think about how protective you are of your children. If someone else talked to your children the way you talk to yourself, you'd get all over them, wouldn't you? If someone else talked to your children the way you talk to yourself, you'd do some nasty things to them, because you say some nasty things to yourself. In fact, you don't talk to anybody else as badly as you talk to yourself. Those limiting words that you carry around. And what are some of those limiting words? You don't deserve it. You can't do it. You're not good enough. Things are hard. It won't work for me. It's never been done before.
No.
No. I don't care. Maybe God's punishing me. You think you're that important. Out of 6 billion people. Yep, down there in Dallas, we got one we're going to take care of. I don't have that kind of creator. He allows me to make my decisions and my choices. And sometimes those decisions and choices are a very big punishment to me. He didn't single me out. My belief is He sent someone to take care of all my punishment. And they took care of it. The only punishment left is that I do to myself. Okay? That's the punishment. He ain't picking me out. I'm not that important. I'm as important as any of the 6 billion. But it'd be a long day if He had to pick us all out. One of my limiting words that I had to get rid of was, don't get your hopes up. What are you supposed to do? Get them down? That's what I heard growing up, though. Don't get your hopes up. Remember the cycle I said of poverty, and this is why I believe it, because in my family, for generations and generations, my grandmother was a Depression-era child. She grew up in poverty in the hills of Kentucky. No running water, no electricity, sixth grade education. She moved to Florida with her husband. She had 5 children. My grandfather died when he was 36 years old, left her a widow, 5 children under the age of 12. No education, no driver's license, never owned an automobile in her life, no skills, no work skills of any kind, no government assistance to speak of at that point in time. And she had to raise those 5 children. She raised 5 incredible children because she had a great attitude. But I know what she passed to my mother, because my mother passed it to me. Don't get your hopes up. Because when she was a Depression-era child, I'm sure my great-grandmother, great-grandfather said to her, Sylvia, don't get your hopes up. Now, was she told that to hurt her? No, she was told to protect her. My mother told me that because she didn't want her little boy to get hurt. But it's a limiting belief. So consequently, I grew up with the attitude, don't get your hopes up. You get what you expect, folks. quote up here by Raymond Hollowell says, don't desire what you don't expect. And don't expect what you don't desire. Because if you desire what you don't expect, you're living in a fantasy. And if you expect what you don't desire, you're attracting only negative circumstance into your life. See, the limiting words are the words we tell ourselves, and it's also the words we hear from other people, and those are limiting beliefs. If you hear them enough, they become a belief, they influence your thinking, they influence your behavior, they influence your actions, which will influence your results. In addition to the limiting words, there are the limiting people in our life. Sometimes those limiting people are very, very close to us. Now, you know, we said in the responsibility statement that our spouse is not responsible for our life. And sometimes the spouse in our life is one of the biggest limiting people. I will tell you that anybody can be a limiting person in your life, but it doesn't mean that you have to allow them to take responsibility for your life. It doesn't mean you have to allow them to influence your life. But they can be limiting people. You have to learn to recognize the limiting people. Some of you have been living with people that are limiting you, never even realized it. What do you do with a limiting spouse? I'm asked that question a lot. Become the example. I'll suggest to you the reason they might be a negative spouse is because you might be like me. And if I were to go in your garage, it might be like my garage, where there are a lot of Home Depot projects that never got finished. Or if you're into electronics like I am, where you might have collected a lot of electronic paraphernalia that you've never used. I have some of that. But it seemed like a good idea at the time. That 1 a.m. infomercial, it was a good-looking idea. Or you came up with business ideas that you never followed through on. Or you made other commitments or pledges, I'm going to lose 50 pounds, I'm going to go to the gym every day, and you never followed up on them. And after a while, a person who's not as strong as you are will begin to believe they're never going to see you follow through on any of them. So when you come home now with this new thing you're really excited about, what are they thinking about? They're thinking about the garage. How about taking some of that energy and going out there and getting those Home Depot projects out of the way? Become the example. Do not try to persuade through words. What you do speaks so loudly, what you say I cannot hear. What you do speaks so loudly, what you say I cannot hear. Become the example. They will follow eventually if you become the example. When they begin to see the commitment, I was in terrible physical shape 10 years ago. Terrible, terrible shape. In fact, I was doing some cardio in St. Augustine one day down by the bayfront, and somebody got down on the horn and just stayed on the horn, and I looked out there on the street, and it was a friend of mine who had stopped in the middle of the street. You can do that in St. Augustine. And he leaned out of the truck. He said, "You look 20 years younger." And I'm still not where I want to be. I'm working on it every day. But about 6 or 7 years ago, I was going to do something about it. So I joined the gym. And what do you think my kids did? Snicker, snicker, snicker. Dad's going to the gym. Because, you know, how many people join the gym in January? You know, if you ever go to the gym in January, you have to stand in line. I mean, you got to wait in line on every machine. But if you go in March, you can just walk right in there, get on that machine and go. And by June, there ain't nobody there. I've been into my gym before where there's me in the mirror. And there's quite a few people in our gym. But that's what my kids thought, too. My kids thought, yeah, just another one of those things of Dad's. Yep, 6 months later, I was still going. My body had begun to take that shape again that it used to be when I was an athlete. And I was feeling good about that. And you could notice it. And that got the attention of my children. My son's about 11 years old at the time, my youngest son. And he said, "Dad, could I start working out?" my daughter, she said, "Dad, could you get me a membership?" And sure, dear, I've got a family membership. Because I was hoping one day you'd come along. But I didn't say, come on to the gym with me. So my son said, "Can I start working out?" And I said, "Sure, we'll take you down to the doctor, the orthopedic guy." I said, "Let Dr. Ingram look at you. If he says it's okay, you can start lifting weights." He went down to Dr. Ingram, told me what he could do. And he started lifting weights. He's about 11 and a half, 12 years old. He graduates in 2 weeks from high school. He bench presses about 350 pounds today and squats just under 700 pounds. I am so proud of him. He's got 18-inch arms, and they're huge guns. Now, I could have never persuaded him to go, but I became the example, and he followed the example. So your negative spouse or your negative children or your negative family members, just become the example. Now, those other people in your life that aren't so close to you, maybe they're friends or maybe they're co-workers and they're negative people in your life, I'm just going to suggest to you that if it's important to you that you break out of where you're at, then it's important that you minimize your time with them. You did not hear me say to give up their friendship, but there are people in my life that I had to minimize my time around because they affected me. I allowed them to. Charlie Tremendous Jones says, "You are the same today as you'll be in 5 years, except for what two things? The books you read and what? The people you meet. The people you associate with. The people you hang around with. If you want to become a millionaire, folks, just start associating with millionaires. They're just like you are. They're no different. You want to be a billionaire, just start hanging around with them. You want to make $20,000 a year? Just hang around with people that make $20,000 a year. Here's what I'll bet you. I used to do some political consulting. And you may or may not know this, but every political consultant in America who does any significant races knows this. Every credit card company knows this. Direct mail offers, they know this about you. Some of the ways they analyze people is by the neighborhoods they live in. Because here's what they know. They know that people that live in a neighborhood have a similar income. They have a similar education. Now, are there extremes? Sure. But they're so common, it is so predictable, they actually have data that you can purchase and you can target based on that data. Now, you probably heard your grandmother say, or you may have even said yourself to your children, "Birds of a feather." Do you believe that? So the question is, what flock have you been flying with? See, these are the kind of people that you want to associate with if you want to move somewhere. Because why? Everybody in here is what? Moving somewhere. The people in here are interested in moving. They're interested in going somewhere. Associate with like-minded people. You've got to remove the limiting people in your life. I had to get rid of some of mine, had to flush mine. And I'm glad I did, because their habits are not the habits I have today. Now, if you smoke, I love you, but I don't hang around with smokers. I do not have a friend in my life today that smokes. You ever notice that, smokers? And we're the worst kind, too, reformed smokers. We're the very worst kind. I love to go in a convenience store and see somebody pay $3.59 for a pack of cigarettes. Boy, I hope it goes up to $5. It's killing you anyway, man. It's amazing when I stop and think about it. When I was a three-pack-a-day smoker, almost everybody I hung around with did what? Smoked. I never made a conscious choice to quit hanging around people that smoked. It's just that nobody in my circle of friends today smoke. Isn't that interesting? Now stop and think about how that applies to every area of your life. So I'm not saying give up your friends, but how about creating some new ones? How about going out, if you belong to a country club, how about don't leave that club, but find the club at the next level and go join it? Maybe you'll be a little nervous that maybe they won't accept you. Well, they're a little nervous whether you're going to accept them. because they expect you to pay the dues every month. If you don't do anything else, I've never belonged to this organization. I don't make any money if you join. But I've put hundreds of people in this organization because it's very similar to an organization that I used to belong to that helped me a lot. But I'll just tell you right now, somewhere near your house within 30 minutes, there's a Toastmasters. And if you want to get around some flocks of eagles, if you want to get around some like-minded people that are going somewhere and you can't find any, that's a common thing I get. Vic, I don't have anybody in my life. Everybody in my life is a limiting person. I don't know any others. Where can I find them? Go to a Toastmasters meeting. You can eat breakfast there, or you can have it for lunch, or you can have it for dinner, or whatever. I don't care where you live. Within 35 to 40 minutes maximum, you'll find a Toastmasters chapter meeting. And you don't have to want to speak to go to Toastmasters. You're going to learn to, but you don't have to have a goal to be a speaker to go to Toastmasters. Toastmasters will help you improve your communication skills, but you may not have a dream or a goal to speak. You may not have to make presentations in your work. Don't go for that reason. Go because there's a lot of like-minded people there. Go because you'll find people that want to go where you want to go. Go because they'll introduce you to other people. It becomes a great place to network from. And I think you might even enjoy it. 65% of the people in the world have a fear of what? Public speaking. Can you imagine how good you feel after you've been to Toastmasters and you started with baby steps, and then you can get up in front of an audience, 5,000 people, and speak? I tell this story because people see me today and think it's easy for me. When I was a sophomore in college, I had a communications class. To pass the class to play that year, because I worked myself down to a pretty tiny GPA, to stay eligible to play, I had to pass this communications class. In order to pass the communications class, I had to get up in front of the class and give a speech. 19 years old. I woke up the morning to give my speech, and I literally could not speak. Remember I said belief can heal the body? Belief can do a lot of things. And fear that day actually took physically my ability to speak away. I was sick at my stomach. I had all types of physical symptoms. I could not speak. I could not go over there and get up in front of a class of 25 people and speak. I had my roommate call the professor that morning and explain to him that I was sick and ill and that I could not come. I don't think he believed Bob, but he accepted it and he allowed me to go give my speech to him a couple of days later so that I could get a grade in the class and pass and play. That's how it used to frighten me. I still feel nervous when I get up in front of people and speak. And if I started thinking about it right now, I could get real nervous. So go to Toastmasters whether you want to speak or not. You'll feel so good about who you become as a result of that. In order to create, change your beliefs, you've got to identify, evaluate, correct, and reinforce. That's a process. The biggest part of changing anything is to acknowledge where you're at. We're in Dallas, Texas today. One of my favorite places on the planet is in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, where I hope to celebrate my birthday again this year. If I wanted to go to Jackson Hole and I wanted to go by car, I got on MapQuest. What's MapQuest going to ask me for? Start and finish. Would MapQuest be able to give me directions to Jackson Hole if I didn't put in the start position? What would it do? Come back with an error, wouldn't it? Just come back and ask me to put in the beginning point. Until you acknowledge where you're at, doesn't mean you beat yourself up over it, doesn't mean you dwell on it, doesn't mean you live there. You just acknowledge where you're at. That's all. You just say, this is where I'm starting from. This is my belief today. And what I did was I examined all of my beliefs. I spent a long time. If this sounds like work to you, it is. Again, I was desperate. I was willing to do anything. When you get to the point where you're willing to do whatever it takes, it'll be easy for you too. So I just started looking at what was true and what was false. What's the truth? Because I'd accepted it as truth. Is it true that the earth is flat? No. Is it true that the sun comes up in the west? No. And I began to evaluate all the things in my life, and I began to look at them. Is this true or is it false? Am I living in the truth or am I living in a lie? And a large part of my life was living in a lie. So you have to identify, you have to evaluate, is this a belief that is true or is it false? And then you got to figure out how you're going to correct it and what you got to do to reinforce it. Part of what I did was through truth cards. I took a box of old business cards that I couldn't use anymore because they had the wrong numbers on them. I X'd out the face of them and turned them over on the back, and I wrote out the truth on the back. I identified my limiting beliefs, and I created what I called truth cards. And I created a stack of them. There was about 50 or 60 of them. Put a rubber band around them. Made an identical set. Put a rubber band around them. One of them was on my desk. One of them was in the car. My favorite ones, I know I must have said it 10,000 times if I said it once. You can do this, and you know you can. You can do this, and you know you can. You can do this, and you know you can. Today, it's so much a part of my fabric that if I get confronted with a circumstance, it may stop me for a minute, but what's my response now? You can do this, and you know you can. You can do this, and you know you can. So I just took all the things that I wanted to correct, and I began to reinforce them with my truth cards. I'd be in my car, come to a traffic light, undo the rubber band, I'd sit there, and out loud, by myself, in the car, I would verbalize what was on those truth cards, and I didn't care if the people next to me were staring at me. It didn't bother me. I didn't care if somebody walked into my office and I'm at my desk verbalizing my truth cards. I had to state it, I had to do it, and I had to repeat it. And I did it. Remember, I'm in a 90-day period. I'm working, doing nothing but working on my belief as hard as I could go. Card after card after card after card. You have to study the evidence. In order to correct the limiting beliefs that you're holding, study the evidence like Roger Bannister did. There were two pieces of evidence that were important to me. Number one, I wanted to find someone who had a similar situation as mine, and I wanted to see what they did, and then I wanted to examine the evidence in my life to prove that I wasn't a loser. So I went back in my earlier life, and I encourage you to go back into your life, and there's not one person here who has not many times earlier in their life felt proud of something they've done. It might be the day you got picked to sing in the choir. It might be the day you sold more peanut butter Girl Scout cookies than anybody else. But whatever it is, there's moments in your life when you've been proud of what you've done. Go back and uncover that evidence. I'll tell you about one of the pieces of evidence that was important to me, and you'll laugh. You'll think, so what? You'll think it's kind of hokey. But when I was in the sixth grade in Ocala, Florida, I was third place in the sixth grade marble shooting tournament in Ocala, Florida. That was a big deal. I got a trophy. No one in my school had ever won anything in that tournament, ever in the history of my school. And I was third place. I got a trophy. They put my picture in the newspaper. Sixth grader Victor Johnson of Blessed Trinity Elementary. I found that picture. And I pulled it out and stuck it on the board in front of my desk. And it's a little bit of yellowing and a little bit of age to it. But whenever I began to doubt whether I really had what it took, I just said, by golly, in the sixth grade, you had it, Bubba. Because I remembered what I had to do. Do you know how many thousands of marbles I had to shoot to be the third place Ocala, Florida marble tournament champion? I had to shoot a lot of marbles. And I remember my brother not wanting to play marbles with me. I'm tired. I don't want to play anymore. You got to keep playing. You got to keep playing. I was driving everybody crazy because I was going to win the marble tournament. I started practicing early to do that. And I expected to win that tournament. I placed third place, but I expected to win it. But I came home with medal. If I could find that trophy today, I'd clean it up. Just to remind myself of the times in my life when I was proud of what I did. That's evidence, folks, that you haven't always been in the circumstance you're in today. And I had to find that evidence. I remember getting up and giving a presentation in my political business to a group of about 25 lawyers. 20-minute presentation in Orlando, Florida. And in that 20 minutes from those lawyers, I raised $750,000. I was proud of that. I wrote a little note about that and put it on my board. Remember the day you raised 750,000. There are moments in your life, there's evidence in your life, when you didn't let limiting beliefs hold you back. Had I let the fact that no one had ever won the marble tournament from Blessed Trinity, had I let the fact that I hadn't been playing marbles that long, if I'd let any of those things hold me back, I couldn't have done that day. So find the evidence of the things in your life, number one, and then look for evidence in other people's lives. I began to study other people. People well known. Winston Churchill is one of my favorites. I'm not a very ordered person. My desk is not like a banker's desk. Any bankers in here? You know, you go into a banker's office, you wonder how they ever work because they ain't got nothing on it. They have got nothing on that desk except, you know, maybe a picture of whatever and a calendar. I don't know when they ever do any work. They ain't got anything to work with. Not true with my desk. Lots of work gets done at my desk. Some of it's still there from 2 or 3 weeks ago. So I used to get criticized. You know, people say, man, you got a messy desk. And I used to think that was a negative, folks. I used to think that is a messy desk. That's why you're not successful. You're not successful because you don't have an ordered desk. If you had a desk like a banker, you'd be successful. I used to think that. And then I read about my friend Winston Churchill. And I found out his desk was worse than mine. In fact, someone once said to Winston Churchill, they questioned his mental ability, talking about how cluttered his desk was. They questioned whether he had it all up here. And Sir Winston, and only the way that Sir Winston could, he looked at him and he said, if a cluttered desk means a cluttered mind, what does an empty desk mean? I loved it! Something else I learned from Sir Winston. I have different sleeping habits than most people. It takes me a while to get going in the morning. But at 1 o'clock in the morning, I'm cooking, man. I mean, I'm creating. I get 1 o'clock in the morning, I am going. I think that's always been the way I've been. You know, I think I was born at 10:30 in the morning. My mama says I didn't want to get up then either, you know. I said, let's do this afternoon, guys, you know. I won't tell you who it was, but there were people close in my life that criticized me because I didn't get up in the morning. It wasn't my grandfather, but I do remember being at my grandfather's. At 5 o'clock in the morning, he got up. And if you were in my grandfather's house, everybody else got up too. Because he made so dadgum much noise you couldn't sleep. I think he did it on purpose. But he got up 5 o'clock in the morning, he's going to go down and feed the cows. So I had this limiting belief that part of my success was because I wasn't getting up at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. And I hear so many people say, you got to get up early. And I let that affect me and impact me. And I let that be a limiting belief. And I blamed my lack of success on the fact that I had those sleeping habits. I don't know why I'm a nocturnal person. I don't know why I have those sleeping habits. But I found out that my friend Sir Winston, he didn't like to get up before noon either. In fact, he had a cot in the war room. He even took a nap, which I like to do sometimes too. By reading, I found out some more evidence. I found out another guy by the name of Albert Einstein never got up before noon. I said, by golly, that's not the reason. So I checked that reason off. Move on to the next one. Can you imagine how that could be a limiting belief, though? If you looked around the world and you saw everybody in the world that was successful, why do they have Little League baseball games at 7 o'clock in the morning? That's terrible. I used to hate that. Who makes the rules around here? We can do it afternoon. But when you're living in a world where everyone else is up, you know, at 6 o'clock in the morning, And at 6 o'clock in the morning, you feel miserable because you just went to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning. And you begin to get these limiting beliefs that you live with. And then I found the evidence that's not true. Not everyone has those habits. Maybe the most of the people do. But I'd rather be in Winston's company and Albert's company, quite frankly. Because you know who else gets up early in the morning? The garbage man gets up early too. Study the evidence. The quickest way to change your belief is what Roger Bannister did. He found the evidence. He proved it to himself. And then finally, using metacognition. Again, thinking about what you're thinking about. It's the way you respond to things that you really want to change. When something bad happens, how do you respond now? What's the first thing you say to yourself? What's the first thing you do? You want to change that. And the only way you can change that is through metacognition. The only way you can change that is to think about what you're thinking about. The only way you can change that is when a circumstance presents itself, you have to stop, catch yourself, and say, what am I feeling? What would my normal response be? I'm going to change that. And if you will immediately put the change in place, reinforce it. Doesn't mean it's over. It's going to take a few times, more than a few times, but eventually you can change your response. Use metacognition to change your response, to change your limiting beliefs. You got to claim the power of a big dream. If you've solved the problem of belief in your life, the next place to look is in the dream that you have. Chances are the dream you have is not big enough. Most people that I coach, most people that I work with are living with a small dream. Only big dreams have the power to move people's souls. You have to have a big dream. You're not going to overcome the fear of rejection if you have a tiny dream. You are not going to overcome the fear of failure if you have a tiny dream. It has to be big. It has to be so big that it literally takes your breath away to think about it. If you don't feel a little nervous when you come up with a new dream, if you don't feel that normal sensation, which fear can be good if used in the right way. Fear was given to us as a protection device. But most people see fear as a stoplight. Fear is not a stoplight. Fear is a caution light. Fear, when used properly, is not a stoplight. It doesn't say, don't do it. It says, slow down, look both ways. And that's what it's meant to do. It was given to us as a survival mechanism, protective mechanism. Most of us use it as a stoplight, and we just come dead to a dead stop in our tracks. A big dream will help you walk through serious fear. A big dream is like a moth drawn to a light almost. A big dream pulls you along. One of my favorite stories about the power of a big dream is John Gotthard. This past January, the day when we went to see the Rose Bowl, we were invited to the home of John Gotthard, the real-life Indiana Jones. I'd read about him. I've written about him. I've talked about my idol, John Gotthard. When he was 15 years old, John Gotthard sat down with a yellow legal pad. He had heard his parents and a friend talking about their life, and the friend said, I wish I were John's age again so I could do it all over again. I'd do things differently. John heard the disgust, the frustration, the discouragement in the person's voice. And this 15-year-old, he was very wise for a 15-year-old. He said, I'm not going to grow up and live my life that way. So he took and he wrote down a list of 127 things he wanted to do in his life. He called it My Life List. At the last count, he's accomplished 119 of those 127 things he wrote down that day, plus 400 other goals that he's accomplished toward those as he's gone along. He's almost 80 years old. Some of those 127 things that he's accomplished, he's climbed almost every major mountain in the world. He followed Marco Polo's route through China and Middle East and Asia. How many people just that one thing, if you just went out and decided, I'm going to follow the route of Marco Polo, for how many people would that be a significant big dream? Just that one thing. That's just one of the many things he did. He's run a mile in 5 minutes. He's broad jumped 15 feet, high jumped 5, 200 sit-ups, 20 pull-ups, etc., etc. Just an ordinary guy, not a physical specimen at all. Just an ordinary guy. He was the first person to explore the 4,200-mile length of the world's longest river. The first person ever. He did it in a kayak. 4,200 miles in a kayak. It was the number one goal on his list when he was 15 years old. And he lived that dream. He's also been down the Congo, the Amazon, and many others. He's been to 122 countries, 260 tribal groups. He's flown over 40 different types of aircraft. He still holds civilian airspeed records. He's read the Bible cover to cover. He learned to speak French, Spanish, and Arabic. How many people in this room could not learn a foreign language in the next year? Everyone could, couldn't they? Everyone could learn a foreign language. It will enrich your life so much. You will have so much in your life whenever you begin to live by a list of life goals. That's just a portion of over 500 dreams that John Goddard has lived. He is known as the number one goal achiever in the world. And his secrets, are you ready for John Goddard's secrets? And they came straight from his lips. And they're very secret now. Get your pen and pencil ready. These are secret. This is what you came for. His dreams were written down. Ha, ha, ha. How many times have you heard that? How many times have you heard that? I heard it for 20 years. Did I have written dreams, written goals? No. And I wouldn't want to ask everyone to raise their hand who has written goals, because there'd be so few it'd embarrass the rest of you. I know, I've sat there. Brian Tracy says that you have 1,000% greater chance of success if your goals are written down. I don't know why it works. Maybe Dennis Waitley, you know, he's a PhD, he's a scientist. Maybe Dennis could explain to us what it does up here and makes it work. I don't know why it works. I just know that you got a 1 in 10 chance of success if you don't have them written down. That was one of John Goddard's secrets. He just wrote them down. He didn't know any better. No one had told him that. 15 years old, that's what's so amazing about it all. But he wrote those goals down. That was one of his secrets. Second secret, they were big. Small dreams don't have any power. Let me tell you about Tina Downey. Great example of a person with a dream and a big dream. What you're about to see did not exist 90 days ago. Did not exist anywhere in the world. Tina is a member of our Champions Club. And Tina sent me a box about 3 months ago. She says, I've got an idea. Tell me what you think. And I looked at her idea and I thought, this is pretty cool. And I told her that. And she created a plan. And she created a product called My Success Box. See, if there's something you want to do with your dreams and with your goals, you want to honor them. You want to honor your dreams and goals. I hope everybody in here has a Jim Rohn journal. That's where I keep my life list, by the way. My life list is important to me. She's got hers. This is something significant. It has beauty. It has value to it. So Tina created this success box. She's got all kinds of little tools in here to help people succeed. But the big thing I want you to know is this was nothing more than a big dream less than 90 days ago. From big dream to being available for you here today. How many of these do you have? How many big dreams do you have right now, right here, you've had for a long time? In many cases, in less than 90 days, they can manifest themselves physically just like this has. Tina, tell us the story.
My story with My Success Box started about a year and a half ago. And I had been with my company for about 7 years. I had my own home-based business. Was very successful, had made it to a leadership position, but wasn't growing. You know, I got to one position and I could not go any further, and I did not know why. I had been to so many seminars, read so many books, listened to so many tapes. I worked for Zig Ziglar for over 5 years and was even his top salesperson one of those years. But I could not break through. I knew something was missing, and I didn't know what. So I fortunately heard the top person in our company speak, and I'd heard him several times. That's the significance of going to seminars over and over and over. Sometimes we finally get it. But he said, the number one reason that people succeed in this business is belief. And when I heard him, I really heard him and realized that's what I didn't have enough of. You know, I believed in my company, I believed in my product, but I needed to have more belief in myself. And I didn't know really how to do that, how to build that. So fortunately for me, a week later, I learned about Vic Johnson's Can You Believe It seminar. And it was CD program and workbooks. And I took that and started implementing everything that I learned over and over into my business. And as I did, my business began to grow. The more belief that I had, the more my business grew. And as a result, this last year, I had a 33% increase in my monthly sales. And that was incredible because it had not grown at all for 3 years. And the only thing that I did differently was Vic's seminar. So I found that incredible. Well, this January, I decided to go through his goals program. And one of the first things that he has you do is to write down 100 life dreams. And I've done a million goals programs, as all of you have, I'm sure. But none of them made me have that many dreams. I was like, oh my goodness, how am I going to have that many dreams? He said, you cannot set goals until you do your dreams, period. So I was like, okay. So I listened, and it was so much fun. The once I finally started actually doing it and breaking through and writing them down, and it was life-changing. So one of the dreams that came out for myself was that I wanted to help people in this area, because I knew if people really understood how to believe more in themselves, how to have dreams for their future, that it could change their life. So I put together a very simple program using everything that I learned from Vic that I was using in my life. And it's those simple daily disciplines. Those are the ones that really make a difference. So I put together my success box, and like he said, called him. And he said, if you have it ready in 90 days, then we can try it at Claim Your Power. So I went to work, and I recruited all my friends and family that would listen. And they helped me tremendously, tweaking it and making it better and better. It has a Living My Dreams journal, so you can write down your 100 life dreams like I did, so you have a place to do that. It has belief cards. It has goal cards. It is a very short, simple instruction book. I wanted to make the whole thing just really fun, really simple, something that anyone could do. And then a pen, it has dreams really do come true on the pen to fill out your journal. So just a complete package. My success box is basically my belief in myself that to follow my own dreams, to help other people to live their dreams.
Give her a hand, folks.
Thank you, Tina.
If you could just stop and think about all the ideas that you have that could manifest themselves in 90 days or less, and all Tina did was took that big dream. And I know it wasn't easy for her. I'm on her email distribution list. She didn't tell you a couple of things that I know for a fact. She didn't have any money. How many of you have ever heard it takes money to make money? You believe it? Yes? It doesn't take money to make money, folks. It takes an idea to make money. It takes an idea to make money, and then it takes action. She had the action and the idea. Here's something else she didn't tell you. There's a CD in here with some music on it, and it's about dreams. Tina wanted that music in that box. So she picked up the phone and called the person who produced that song. She told him what she was doing. And Tina didn't have the money to pay her a royalty or anything else. And the woman let her use the song for free. Now, how many people would have stopped in their dream when they realized that they had to make that call because they'd go, there's no way they'll let me have it for free? Limiting belief, isn't it? Okay. I want you to come back expecting, because Jim Rohn, if there's anybody that can deliver one, folks, whew, he can deliver one.